Next case in our calendar is 01-1179, Cleveland Bar Association versus Tyrone Reed. Mr. Koblenz.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Richard S. Koblenz, and I'm here on behalf of Tyrone Reed, who is the respondent in this matter. Your Honors, I've argued in front of this court a number of times on disciplinary cases, and quite frankly, I am more disturbed by this particular case than I am by any other one I've ever handled. I have learned through studying court decisions that the purpose of the disciplinary system here is to protect the public and not to punish. And in all candor, and looking at the facts presented here in this case, we see absolutely nothing here that would indicate that the public was not well served and that the public needs to be protected from Tyrone Reed under these circumstances. We respectfully disagree with the board's finding of misconduct on all three of the particular canons that were cited in both the complaint and in the board decision.
When I read your objections, I was pretty impressed and pretty persuaded, but then when I read the reply, it looks like it wasn't just a simple matter of him relying on these letters. He actually let him use the letterhead, which implied that he had associates that were licensed to practice. And you seem to argue that just because he disclosed it was Pennsylvania, that gave him a free ride. How do you respond to, you haven't had a chance to respond to them in writing. How do you respond to what the board has said in response to your objections?
Your Honor, how I respond to that is that as the testimony came out at the hearing, when Mr. Moore approached Mr. Reed, he told them that this was the way that he needed to operate. And Mr. Reed checked with other attorneys whom Mr. Moore had sublet space from in the past, and they confirmed that. What happened was with the letterhead, Mr. Moore paid for that particular piece of letterhead to happen. Mr. Reed did not operate with that letterhead that had Mr. Moore's name on it. Mr. Moore had told him.
But Mr. Moore did.
Yes.
Had Mr. Reed's letterhead.
That's correct.
And he's actually practicing law in Ohio under Reed's letterhead.
Your Honor, well, until the decision came down in Cromwell, and factually what happened, Your Honor, I actually represented Mr. Moore. Mr. Moore came to me in May of 1998 with the complaint for the unauthorized practice of law, was very upset because he had these two letters from the Bar Association and says, I'm completely legal. I informed him of the Cromwell decision, which had come out approximately three months earlier. At that point, he completely stopped and he left the Reed office. So once notice was actually given to them, he stopped. And Mr. Reed did do some checking. He didn't go out and do he didn't do a substantive, legal research project, but he did check with the other attorneys with whom Mr. Moore had sublet space in the period of time through 1994 and was told that this was what he was doing and it was appropriate. He felt, and then the second letter from disciplinary counsel came after that letterhead was being used, Your Honor. That letterhead was being used starting in 1994. The second disciplinary counsel letter was, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was June of 1996. I know it was 1996. So
why didn't he correct the employed by impression that the letter referred to?
He didn't believe that it necessarily gave that impression. So it wasn't a matter of correcting it. Like I say, disciplinary counsel saw that letterhead and didn't raise that as an objection, to my knowledge. And all Mr. Reed didn't find out about the disciplinary counsel investigation until Mr. Moore came in and showed him the letter that said somebody complained to disciplinary counsel and I was cleared. And that's all that happened. And he really didn't even hardly look at it. He said he looked at it very quickly and, in all candor, did what a lot of lawyers do, sort of jumped to the bottom line that said everything was fine, that there was no charge being made, and he walked away from it. By the way, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. I apologize. I didn't bring that up before. So that would be the only way I can respond to it. He was trying the best he could. You have to understand, Mr. Reed is a sole practitioner. He's got an office in the city of Cleveland, more of an inner-city neighborhood, doesn't have an exhaustive law library. This is the kind of man who services the part of the public that a lot of lawyers, in all candor, don't service. And he provides a very good service to them, as the evidence showed, and also his the clients who came forward, and also the other attorneys and the judges who came forward on his behalf. Fortunately enough, Your Honors, and if you read the brief, you could see that we're sort of floundering a little bit with the finding of conduct prejudicial administration of justice, because we didn't quite know what the definition of that was, but fortunately enough, within the last 3 weeks in the Cleary decision, you have defined that. And that definition states, as the Supreme Court of Minnesota has observed, DR 1102A5, is sufficiently well-defined because it does no more than reflect the fundamental principle of professional responsibility that an attorney has a duty to deal fairly with the court and the client. Your Honors, I would submit to you that that has absolutely no application, that definition, to the facts in this matter. And under those circumstances, I would further submit to you that a finding that Tyrone Reed engaged in any conduct that was prejudicial to the administration of justice would be an erroneous finding. We think that the board was wrong on that. We would hope that you would rectify that.
I had a little bit of trouble following in the report to us and in your brief. It seems to me he sought an opinion from maybe two separate bodies as to whether or not what he was doing was a violation, and the answer was no.
That is not exactly correct, Your Honor. What happened was two insurance adjusters, one in 1989 and one in 1996, wrote to, at first, the Cleveland Bar Association in 1989, asking about Cornell Moore. And the Cleveland Bar Association wrote back and said that he wasn't in violation. In 1996, another insurance...
He was not in violation.
Moore.
And your client was privy to that.
My client was shown that 1989 letter when Moore approached him to rent the space in 1994. In 1996...
Let's stay there for a minute. So that if Moore was not in violation, vicariously or otherwise, I assume you say your client could not be resigned.
That was the way we feel, Your Honor, that our client felt that he was not in was not in violation in any way whatsoever.
So there was one body who said that at that point.
Right, before that. And then 2 years after he had joined Mr. Reed, another complaint was filed with disciplinary counsel. That was investigated by Stacey Solacek at that time, now Stacey Beckman, and she likewise found no cause and dismissed the complaint. After that was done, now while it was going on...
Complaint against Moore.
Oh, against Moore. Moore didn't show Reed that letter until he had already gotten what I referred to as a closing letter from disciplinary counsel. That was a letter from Ms. Beckman.
And disciplinary counsel said, we agree, no violation.
That's correct.
And so he was found not to have been engaging in the authorized practice of law twice, and then your client was found responsible for aiding him in the unauthorized practice of law that he wasn't engaging in.
That is correct, Your Honor. However, he was found for that after... Moore was charged formally with unauthorized practice of law in 1998.
Yeah, it was found that I apparently didn't give the disciplinary counsel didn't have all the information the first time, right? Wasn't that?
That may be, Your Honor. I was not privy to that. That's what it appeared.
The second time they did find him to be.
No, the second time, the third time, Your Honor, the Cleveland Bar brought a formal complaint. I represented Moore, and we stipulated. Based on the Cromwell case, we entered a stipulation on that, and that came before this court based on the stipulation that due to Cromwell, that was the unauthorized practice of law. But it was not until Cromwell was decided, and that's part of our due process claim here, Your Honors. In all candor, there was no notice here. And it's very difficult, with all due respect, the practice of law is difficult enough. But to do it in a blind, and when you don't know, and when you've got bodies of letters coming back and telling you something looks okay, to then be subject to violation, quite frankly, is a barrier that, as a practicing lawyer in the state of Ohio, I don't particularly want to operate under, and I don't think any of my fellow lawyers do either. You know, it's basically, if you tell us what the rules are and we know for sure, it's one thing, but
If you're a lawyer and you're assisting somebody who's not authorized to practice law in Ohio, there's no mystery about that, is there?
But, Your Honor, he did not know that until, as soon as I told Mr. Moore about Cromwell, he walked away. It ended. That day.
Mr. Moore
walked out of the Reed office, packed his stuff up and left. He told Mr. Reed about our conversation and he left. And it ended, the entire relationship ended that day. In fact, to this day, Mr. Reed doesn't even know where Mr. Moore is. He packed his stuff up and left. But as soon as he knew, he had had two letters that said it was okay. As soon as he got the third charge and talked to, and I don't mean to sound arrogant, competent counsel, and told him what the current state of the law was, he listened to it. But he didn't know that at the time. He was still operating under the two letters from the charging authorities, both the Bar Association and disciplinary counsel. And quite frankly, Your Honor, when you talk about aiding a non-lawyer, that's another problem we have here, is because the code says you cannot aid a non-lawyer in the unauthorized practice of law. It doesn't say a non-Ohio licensed lawyer.
But we've had cases that say it does. And
you have since Cromwell.
Unfortunately, he hadn't read.
That was since Cromwell, Your Honor.
I think we had one we've held that before that, haven't we? Before
not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. I don't think it ever came up before Cromwell that it was ever set up that way. And the title of the rule says the same thing with the fee splitting, which I think opens up an entire Pandora's box should this court do this. We gave you the example of torts in our brief. I'll give you another example. A partner in the Chicago office who's licensed in Illinois of Jones, Day, Ravis, and Pogue comes into the Cleveland office and talks to somebody at LTV Steel in an office outside of Pat McCarron's office. He bills for it. He's a partner. He gets a piece of that fee. According to the Board of Commissioners, that man's in violation because he's not an Ohio licensed lawyer. I don't think that's a slope that we want to go down in this state. I think we are opening an entire box here of a non-licensed. We're not talking about somebody who's not licensed to practice law anywhere. Our tort example. I was talking to a friend of mine who does national air crash work yesterday. He's got fee agreements with lawyers in 25 different states today. This goes on all over the United States. And quite frankly, if, and it is our situation that we give you in our brief, you are opening up a box here that if you want to set the rules up, that's fine. But to do this right now, there are lawyers all over the state that today are dividing fees with lawyers who are not licensed in the state of Ohio. They're doing it with their client's consent. They're doing it openly. And from our viewpoint, they're doing it appropriately because of the way the work is being done. And quite frankly, it's not even a matter of being admitted pro hac vici because most of these cases don't have court cases. So therefore, we're not in a situation where you can go to a court. I mean, in all candor, judges, with all due respect, don't get paid piecework. If I go to a judge and say, I'm going to come in, I've got somebody who's coming into Ohio, he wants to talk to somebody about a contract, can I file an action in your court to get him admitted pro hac vici? They're going to be like, I'm crazy. But I think that that might be the only way around it. I don't know, but that isn't the way the rule is set up right now. And with all due respect, I don't think disciplining a lawyer is the way to change the state of this law. I think the way to do it is by pronouncement, by giving complete notice, and by letting the lawyers in this state know what the rules are they have to abide by. This is not, and I just had a disciplinary matter in federal court, and one of the arguments we made is that the Code of Professional Responsibility, and you know this, is quasi-criminal in nature. This isn't just best practice. This is a floor that if you fall below it, you stand to be professionally sanctioned. And as this court well knows, even a public reprimand carries with it a stigma. It carries with it publication. And to go one step further, and I'm not anticipating anything that happens, but your rules are very specific that a public reprimand, if there's another disciplinary problem, cannot be granted again. So therefore, there is a lot at risk for the lawyer who comes here. And in all candor, I've heard one of the commissioners said to me, well, it's no big deal, it's only a public reprimand. Well, you know, with in all candor, it's no big deal if it's somebody else getting reprimanded. If you're the one who's getting your name published in OBAR, you're the one who's getting your name published in local bar journal, local newspaper, it's a big deal because we trade on our reputation. And when somebody comes out and says that this court has given an imprimatur to saying you've been guilty of professional misconduct, I think that that bodes very, very dangerously for the future of that particular attorney. I'm sure, as you're aware, the Green Book comes out on Monday, Tuesday, around the Justice Center in Cleveland and probably around the Justice Center in Franklin County. The scuttlebutt is whose name was in the Green Book.
Your argument. You say that if we find a violation here, that I'm sitting in Toledo and a Michigan attorney refers me a case because it happens to be handled in the Lucas County Common Police Court. This may be an admission against interest because I'm sitting here thinking about that now. And then when it's all finished, I send part of the fee up to Jim Kelly in Monroe. I violated the canon.
That's right, because he's not licensed to practice law in the state of Ohio, Your Honor. He's a non-Ohio licensed lawyer, which means according to the way that the board is defining 3102A, he's a non-lawyer.
Well, he wasn't practicing in Ohio, though. He's practicing in Michigan.
But
the difference, this person is practicing in Ohio without a license to practice in Ohio. He's an unauthorized practice. You can't share a fee with somebody who is engaged in unauthorized practice of law. You can share a fee, I think, with a Michigan lawyer who's admitted to the Bar of Michigan.
Not if you read the way this board decision is written, Your Honor, number one. And number two, again, I'm going to go back to the point that it was not known that Moore was engaging in the unauthorized practice of law at the time. You know, if this had continued on.
That's your first issue, but that's not this issue.
No, but this issue, the way the board opinion is written, it says he was a non-lawyer. It doesn't say that he was practicing just because he was practicing in Ohio. And frankly, I think that's a distinction without a difference, Your Honor, in all candor. That means that the fellow can stand on the other side of the state line and yell across to Ohio and then get fees, but if he walks into Ohio, he can't. I don't really see the, you know, I don't really see the distinction there. Your Honor, I would like to reserve the time if you don't mind.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kobenz. Ms. Lazel.
Thank you. My name is Pamela Lazel, and I represent the realtor, the Cleveland Bar Association, in this case. The panel of the Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline is absolutely correct that Mr. Reed violated the disciplinary rules, and the Cleveland Bar Association was correct in having him reprimanded. The board found that Mr. Reed violated three separate provisions of the disciplinary rules. Disciplinary Rule 3101A, which is the unauthorized practice of law. Disciplinary Rule 3102A, which is the sharing of legal fees with a non-lawyer. And Disciplinary Rule 102A5, which is conduct that was prejudicial to the administration of justice. Disciplinary Rule 3101A states that a lawyer shall not aid a non-lawyer in the unauthorized practice of law. In this particular case, Mr. Moore was negotiating settlement agreements on personal injury cases pre-suit. He was communicating on letterhead entitled Tyrone E. Reed and Associates with insurance companies and clients, and he was practicing law. The practice of law includes representing others with regards to their courses of action for personal injury, communicating with insurance companies about making claims, advising persons of their rights, and the terms and conditions of settlement.
Counsel,
I would like to go back to Justice Douglas' example. You've got a case with an attorney from Michigan that you're sharing with, and some distinction perhaps is that that attorney's not practicing in Ohio. If that attorney comes into Ohio to take a deposition in the case that you're sharing, which when I traveled all over the country when I was a trial lawyer taking depositions, if that attorney comes into Ohio, but is not licensed in Ohio, and takes a deposition, does that case now fit within your definition?
No, it does not, and let me explain why. This case is entirely different because Mr. Moore was indeed licensed in another state. He was licensed in Pennsylvania. However, he had not been practicing in Pennsylvania for years. He was sharing space with Mr. Moore, and prior to that...
Let's add that to our case then. The attorney you're sharing fees with hadn't practiced for years, but now all of a sudden he got a great case, sharing it with you, comes and takes a deposition.
Well, see, that's my argument here, is that by practicing in the state of Ohio and no longer practicing in Pennsylvania, Mr. Moore is a non-lawyer. Your lawyer who's practicing in Michigan is a Michigan lawyer.
Excuse me. He still has a Pennsylvania license?
Yes, he did.
And so he's still fully licensed to practice in Pennsylvania?
He was not practicing in Pennsylvania.
But he is fully licensed to practice.
He was fully licensed.
There's no requirement to use it, is there?
No, there's no requirement. You're right. But, again...
Did he indicate on the letterhead that he was licensed as an attorney in Pennsylvania?
Yes. It did state that he was licensed in Pennsylvania. But the interesting thing is not only was there letterhead indicating that he was part of Tyrone E. Reed and Associates, Mr. Reed also ran ads in the yellow pages and in the white pages showing an ad saying Tyrone E. Reed and Associates and listing the name of Cornell Moore and two other attorneys as the associates under that ad. And that ad did not indicate to the public that he was licensed only in Pennsylvania. His name appeared just as the two other lawyers working in the same offices as Mr. Reed as an associate for all appearances. And what's interesting here is Mr. Reed claims that he's a sole practitioner. However, his firm name is Tyrone E. Reed and Associates, and his ads are run not only with his name on the ad, but with the name of several other lawyers working out of his office, and those names included Mr. Moore.
Is he charged with deceptive advertising?
He is not. We have included that as part of aiding in the unauthorized practice of law because he held Mr. Moore out to the public as an associate, as a lawyer in his firm, and did not designate him as a Pennsylvania lawyer.
It could be.
We didn't.
If you're looking for charges, you could have charged him for that.
Yes, we could have. You're right, Your Honor. But essentially, the Dworkin case stated that a lawyer is one who has met the prescribed requirements and is regularly admitted to practice law in this state. So a lawyer is someone who's admitted to practice in this state. And it was found by the board in this particular case that Mr. Moore was indeed a non-lawyer because he was not licensed to practice law in the state of Ohio. And therefore, by aiding Mr. Moore in the practice of law, by providing him with office space, by providing him with secretarial assistance, by providing him with research assistance, by providing him with telephone accessibility, by providing him with an ad in the newspaper, and encouraging clients to call that number and request Mr. Moore as a consulting attorney, Mr. Reed aided Mr. Moore in the unauthorized practice of law. And the board correctly determined that for Ohio purposes, Moore is a non-lawyer, and by permitting Moore to use respondent's office, permitting Moore to use the letterhead paper styled Tyrone E. Reed and Associates, which included Moore's name, and by placing an ad in the phone book doing the same, and by making court appearances for Moore's clients, respondent had indeed violated Disciplinary Rule 3101A. In addition, the board found that Mr. Reed violated Disciplinary Rule 3102A, which is that a lawyer or law firm shall not share legal fees with a non-lawyer. And I think this goes back again to the board's determination that Moore was indeed a non-lawyer practicing in Ohio without an Ohio license. And Mr. Reed openly admitted in his answer and in his testimony at the hearing that he did indeed split fees with Mr. Moore. So again, the panel properly determined that Mr. Reed violated Disciplinary Rule 3102A, which provides that a lawyer or law firm shall not share fees with a non-lawyer. And then finally, the board made the determination that Mr. Reed violated Disciplinary Rule 102A5, which states that a lawyer shall not engage in conduct that is prejudicial to the administration of justice. The board determined that in this case, Mr. Reed failed to report and indeed condoned and assisted in Moore's unlicensed practice of law. Mr. Koblentz referred to a 1996 disciplinary letter that was sent to Mr. Moore. And if you look very carefully at that 1996 letter, which was attached to the board opinion, the second paragraph of that letter states that Mr. Moore is employed by the law firm of Tyrone E. Reed and Associates. I found that rather interesting because now Mr. Reed is claiming he was a sole practitioner. He had no associates. The title that he had on his letterhead is totally meaningless. There were no associates with Tyrone E. Reed. And Mr. Reed goes on to say, I relied on this 1996 letter to say that it was okay for Mr. Moore to continue practicing the way he was. remind you that at the time that this letter was written, Mr. Moore and Mr. Reed had already begun their relationship of office sharing. That started in 1994. In 1996, now, this letter states that Mr. Moore is employed by the law firm of Tyrone E. Reed and Associates. Mr. Reed saw this letter. He's now claiming that Mr. Moore was never an employee. However, this letter clearly states that that's how the board was looking at Mr. Moore, as an employee. And Mr. Reed did absolutely nothing to clarify that problem. He was put on notice at this point in time that the board, the disciplinary council, was looking at Mr. Moore as an employee working under the supervision of Mr. Reed. And Mr. Reed now is claiming, no, that never was the case. He was a sole practitioner. Mr. Reed did absolutely nothing to clarify this issue and chose to totally ignore it and allow everything to continue on. He had an opportunity in 1996 and did nothing. The panel, in looking at this case and in determining what kind of sanctions to give, gave consideration to the board guidelines, and they also looked to this court's recent decision in the Pavlik case. And in doing so, they found that in the Pavlik case, respondent was charged with a violation of disciplinary rule 3101A for neglecting to supervise a lawyer who was not licensed in Ohio, for not alerting clients that the lawyer was not licensed to practice in Ohio, and Pavlik was given a public reprimand. Like Pavlik, in this case, Mr. Reed failed to appropriately monitor Moore and avoid confusion regarding the non-existent status of Moore's Ohio license. Mr. Reed lent Moore the appearance of legitimacy, but failed to provide Moore with the supervision required by Ohio law. In addition, he shared fees with Moore, and therefore the board found that the sanction of public reprimand was appropriate, and the same was recommended. Cleveland Bar Association doesn't contend that Mr. Reed's disciplinary violations are ongoing. In light of the Supreme Court's decision in Moore and the facts of this matter, Mr. Reed did indeed aid the unauthorized practice of law. He split fees with a non-lawyer engaged in conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice, and he deserves to be appropriately sanctioned.
Counsel, I had to wait until you finished your argument because when I read that letter from disciplinary counsel, it was dated April 30th, 1996.
Correct.
I read that as a limiting letter. That second paragraph says, talking about Mr. Moore, he does not appear in Ohio courts on behalf of clients and does not sign any documents in this jurisdiction on behalf of clients. That sounds to me like, and then they go on and explain what they mean, that sounds to me like they're saying, if you don't do this, you are not, in effect, practicing law in Ohio. Isn't that what that letter could be interpreted to say?
Well, you also have to take it in light with the prior sentence that he was employed by the law firm of Tyrone E. Reed and Associates, which implies supervision of those activities.
Well, but that's worse yet. He's employed by that law firm, and they're supervising him in the unauthorized practice of law, then that's your contention. But that's not what Mr. Reed says, and... But let's take into consideration that former sentence. Doesn't that second sentence say that if you're not signing documents or appearing in court, you're not practicing law in Ohio? I mean, it doesn't say anything about sharing fees.
No, it doesn't say anything about sharing fees in this letter, and I don't think that the fee-sharing issue was at issue at this point in time. That became an issue in the more recent case.
Well, my problem in questioning you so closely is we have to write a decision in this case, and I'm not sure what we're going to say. To this moment, I'm not sure.
And
what would you have us say?
Well, I guess I'm asking...
You can't authorize practice law in Ohio. We all know that.
Right.
What does that mean, given this?
Given this, basically what it means is that Mr. Reed allowed an unlicensed lawyer to practice law by settling, by making negotiations with insurance companies, as the Moore opinion said. I mean, the Moore opinion made the determination that he, Mr. Moore, was practicing law in this state.
So you think we've said all we need to say in the Moore opinion?
Well, with regards to Mr. Moore, and that's why we filed this case now with regards to Mr. Reed, because we're asking you to look at his actions in relation to Mr. Moore.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lazo.
Any other questions?
Mr. Kobent, you've saved 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, I guess very quickly, in only 30 seconds, Your Honors, this is not the right place to be deciding to make the rules up for attorney discipline. With all due respect, I don't think that this quasi-criminal area is the appropriate time to decide that we're going to change the rules. We think it's very clear what happened here. Mr. Reed's a good lawyer. He's a man who's tried very hard. He's a man who, we believe, has tried to do all the right things. And those letters, again, that goes right into our Raley argument. Quite frankly, the other thing is Pavlik's distinguishable. Every other unauthorized practice of law case was a lack of supervision and was an employee type of situation. That wasn't, you know, necessarily the situation here. It doesn't apply. Pavlik does not apply to this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Koblenz. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.